From Las Vegas, Rocket Pig Satellite Season 2, Episode 3. Tonight's guest star, Rosie Angelo, Megan McConnell, and Heather Wood. Here are your hosts, Aubrey Christine Trujillo and Jerry G. Angelo.
Cool. Wow, Angela, thank you so much. I'm Jerry Angelo. This is Chris Ivan.
Hi. How are you guys?
We are live here in Las Vegas at Carcass Studios. Joe Lujan is CEO and creative there. He's amazing. Chris Ivan is a producer and also a singer and songwriter. Our label with Rocket Pig is Helium 3, and you heard that song by David Perrottiacco. I think it was called Daughter of God. We have this library of music that we're excited to start putting out there and doing, and we're working with Chris as well. How is it living in Las Vegas?
It's fast paced. It's beautiful. Everything's open 24/7, which I love. If I wanted to go to the studio at 1 o'clock in the morning, I can. It's just beautiful. It's a city that runs off of people who have dreams.
That's cool. And you had just finished your, how many albums do you have? You have two?
So I currently have one, debuted it last November, November 27th, Biggest Battle, which is on all platforms. But I'm currently working on my second one, which is almost done, which is a complete 360 from the getting to know me and the whole storytelling to a little bit of the deeper
raw,
meaning.
As raw and animalistic and,
yeah.
And that's
yeah.
Primal. Tell you're doing something that like Beyonce was doing too. You guys, that's so cool about the video. Tell us about the whole, you and Joe working together on the movie and the musical and the.
Oh yeah. So not a lot of independent artists can basically first off afford music videos because it's very pricey. And I had met Joe Lujan, and he and I decided to work one day on one music video. And then it went to two music videos. After three music videos, we had sat down and we were just discussing, we should just do a whole visual album. Because you don't see any independent artists doing that. And there's not a lot of representation for that. And I wanted to kind of take that leap because as an independent artist, you can still do exactly what these A-list pop stars are doing, because if you want it, you can go and achieve it. It's just, at the end of the day, it's how hard are you willing to work for it.
Awesome. And we have some incredible guests tonight.
Hey, that's my job. What the heck?
Oh, yes. Oh gosh.
Man. Hey, guys. Almost.
Who are you again?
I'm Chris Ivan's assistant, Aubrey Christine Trujillo.
No, this is Aubrey. Look how beautiful she is.
Oh, thank you, Chris.
I'm chopped liver.
No, this is Jerry D'Angelo, the mind behind all of this craziness. So we're all thrilled to be here to invite our amazing guests. These women are inspirational. They are hardworking. They are powerhouses. And we all feel very lucky to call them friend. So without further ado, our first guest is Miss Rosie Angelo. She is phenomenal. As you can see, credits right there. And Rosie, welcome to the show.
There she is.
Hey. Oh, we're muted, Rosie. Can you unmute your mic for us?
Sorry about that. But
there we go. Hi, welcome.
I'm so excited to be on with you guys.
What was that, Jerry? He wanted you to tell us why you might be muted. Because you're in a very special
meeting. I am. So I am actually coming to you guys live from set. Like most filmmakers, I wear a lot of hats, including working as a COVID compliance officer. And between the time when I was wrapping up my day and jumping on with you guys, I had to tell my producer, hey, I'm going to be off in a different corner of the set. So if anybody is used to filming in the Burbank area and has ever shot at Envision 8 Studios, you might recognize the bar scene that I am currently recording from. It's honestly, it's the first time I've been in a bar since pre-COVID, so we'll chalk that up to a success.
Wow.
It's probably most of us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, before we get into it, Jerry, I feel like we should clarify. My last name is Angelo, but to my knowledge, we are not related.
Right. I mean, you haven't popped up on 23andMe yet. Right?
We got to figure that one out.
You're the only other Angelo I've met. There was an actual Angelo that didn't have a hyphen or something. It was pretty unique.
Like a D'Angelo, or we're a rare breed. Although we are the name of
everything that you're about to share with us. But before you get on, I want to introduce our other two amazing guests tonight. We have Megan McConnell. Megan is a dear friend of mine, actress, singer, opera singer, music theater singer, and an incredible part of a writing team, Chicks Who Write Stuff. Welcome, Megan.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, Megan.
What's up, friends?
Thank you for coming. I think you just met Rosie in the green room. You two ladies are amazing. But before we get any further along, I'm going to introduce the other half of...
Well, let's let Megan introduce her friend.
Yes. Oh, what a great idea. Yes. The other half of Chicks Who Write Stuff.
The other half is Heather Wood.
Woo.
I would be nowhere without. So.
Hi, Heather.
Hi, guys. How are you?
It's on. So real quick, where is everyone? What city is everyone in? We're in Las Vegas.
I'm in Pasadena, California.
Yep, I'm in Santa Maria, which is like North Los Angeles right now, visiting the folks.
Oh, nice.
During the COVID time, because we can work.
Yeah. The set that I want is Burbank, but I'm usually Los Feliz.
Oh, cool.
Ooh, Los Feliz, nice.
The bars there, remember that?
Hmm? Oh,
bars.
There were so many good ones.
Oh,
I know, I'm going to have to.
One survived.
I'm just going to have to switch this. I'm so sorry, guys. My headphones are acting up, and I feel like I'm jumping all over everyone's talking. Give me just a sec.
Oh, thank you for
just keep jumping over. We'll continue on, and you jump in whenever you need to. And,
sounds good.
If we're going like this, that means it's your question that you have to repeat or something like that.
Oh, okay. Finger guns. Very specific.
Let's start with Heather and Megan. Okay. It's 2021, a year into COVID. Where are you guys at right now in your career and in your life?
Luckily, we are in a job that we can do from our homes, so we lucked out with that. So we're working for Nickelodeon right now, and we stopped for several months, and then we figured out a way to get our production started again. So,
what show on Nickelodeon are you guys currently working on?
It's called Side Hustle. It's about two girls who blow up their neighbor's boat, and so they have to take little side jobs to pay him back.
Oh my God, I love it so much.
So, it's really fun.
At the end.
How did the process start of you getting that particular job? We'll go back into earlier times once we get started of your earlier careers, but like what happened? Like you guys were... You had to pitch something, or a manager pitched something, or you knew somebody. Like, what got you this particular job?
Well, we lucked out. Actually, this particular job is actually, sorry, I have kind of a boring answer. Are we our agent like set up the interview and like and they liked us enough, but
well, there is a little story behind it. We had actually interviewed for a different job for a show called Danger Force. We didn't get, but they liked us so much that they actually, the producers there, pitched us to our showrunner now and said, we should have hired these girls. You should check them out because they're very good friends. So so we kind of got the job because we didn't get another job.
The other job. But we brought that guy, we brought Jake. We brought him some tequila once we were hired. I want to recommend us a bottle of tequila.
Did you guys come to the package deal? Like it's this your way, the highway? Or is it one got the opportunity and you said you wanted to bring the other on?
The team is package deal. So we're kind of like, so we're kind of like treated as one entity in the
room. Okay. And here's a question that I don't know. And like as far as pay goes from a SAG scale, do you get paid as a team or you get paid individually then?
Kind of both. We split one salary, but they split it for us. We don't have
So we're paid as one person. And we split it. But it's also kind of really helpful because especially if you're starting out and you're a team, you're two writers for the price of one. And I think it does help get in the door, especially when you're new. Yeah.
Sure. And now that you're established, hopefully they're listening and they can maybe add some extra bonuses on top of that salary.
Mm. Oh,
we sent that picture to our agent. You guys picked the appropriate photo.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong, though. I will ditch Megan as soon as a better opportunity is available for me. I will ditch her immediately. It's out. We're over. So
that's incredible. Oh my
gosh. You already got a new partner, and it's a cow.
Which we have a cow on our show.
Yeah.
You do.
Did you know?
We don't get to see because we're not there. Heather,
I saw her once, but she's like, I said that we have a cow, Cash the Cow, we named it on the show, and just they put her on the green screen. It was cool.
And Rosie, you're currently working. Okay, so you did three short films back there in post production, and now you're getting set up for a feature film. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Let's hear a little bit. Now you're working on set, but where are you as far as your other stuff that you're running, what's important to you?
Absolutely. So I've at this point been in LA, I guess, for about, oh my God, I think almost 7 years, which is insane. And in that time, I've been really lucky in that I've gotten to work in a bunch of different parts of the industry, right? I was in casting for a little bit. I was in production for a little bit. I was a script coordinator for a little bit. And all of those things kind of gave me a better understanding of how to run my own sets. So I'm so, so grateful for that. In terms of like the projects that I'm passionate about, COVID was bad for a lot of reasons, but good in that it really made me buckle down and write. Over the course of COVID, I think I cranked out just vomit drafts of probably like three features and a pilot. Granted, it was mostly escapism. I was like, I need something happy. I'm going to throw everything else to the side and just write a Hallmark holiday movie because I need to feel good right now. But the other nice thing was my other half of my production team, my boyfriend, Nate, we are Small Tall Productions, and we decided that we weren't going to let COVID stop us from creating. So in addition to the writing that we were doing, we tried to figure out what can we make right now in this world as safely as we can and as efficiently as we can. And so in the past year, we wrote three one-day shoot short films. And we shot all three of them, two in November and one in December of last year. Funny enough, we actually shot them at the stage that I'm working on today. Big shout out to Envision 8 if anybody's looking for a really great standing set. And then in that quarantine time, we also said, okay, we're going to do these short films. We're going to see if we can get them really as a bit of a test run to see how filmmaking is during COVID, because if we can pull this off, we can pull off our first feature. So we also wrote a super contained two-person, two-location, ultra-low budget feature that we are currently crowdfunding for and planning to make in July.
Congratulations. That's incredible.
Thank you. It's really exciting. It's really scary.
So for Megan and Heather, you guys are your I guess one of your main jobs right now is writing. What other things exist that if you could choose to do anything besides the writing, would it be?
I would do
one of you is an opera singer, right?
That's right.
Wait, that way. There we go.
Sorry, Heather, I interrupted you.
Oh no, no, oh my gosh. No. No. I would either be a romance novel writer or a stand-up comic, I think otherwise.
Oh yeah.
And you can be both too, right?
Both. Hope so.
You are a stand-up comic.
And a romance novel, right?
Oh, really? Is there a novel? I want to. Oh.
Oh, that's a great picture.
That was your profile pic for a while. Oh, there you
go. Yeah. Oh, you're in the movie. Oh, you're in. That's from. Where is that? That's in the movie.
That's
cool.
Set before we got kicked out for COVID.
Yeah. The very first day of our very first table read for the very first episode was March 13th. 2020, and that was the day we shut down first for COVID.
Wow.
We're all so sad.
It was really exciting. They went to rehearse, and then they were let go like half an hour later. Like, sorry.
Wow. All right, everyone's going.
So you've been shattered. I mean, how did you take that? You've been I know how hard you've been working. I know how many opportunities you've been up for. How did you take that? I mean, everybody was kind of rising up in March, and then things just...
Yeah. We took the opportunity to work on some of our own stuff. So we actually went in quarantine together for about a month at a friend's cabin in Arizona, which she sold afterwards. It was really great while it lasted. So we continued to work on our own stuff, and they kept us kind of abridged in the writer's room. We still play online games together.
Jackbox games and stuff. Jackbox
games just to keep knowing each other and comfortable with one another. So that when we started again, it didn't feel like, we were meeting each other all for the first
time. It
was
helped us connect.
We spent 6 weeks together before everything shut down.
Oh, wow.
So.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was not on.
Yeah. Megan had her big television debut on the show. They had they wrote in all the writers to do little cameos so they could safely COVID safe, be in person for a minute. And Megan had her national debut, a week ago, Saturday, as Luna the Tuna, the school mascot.
Oh, you got to tell us about this name. Luna the Tuna?
Literally a tuna.
I should send a picture of this. I'm going to.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's amazing.
I love that. That's so good.
I had a fancy trailer one day because they keep everyone separate. So even if you're a tuna, you get your own trailer. I did walk around the Paramount lot again because I was so excited to be there. I was like, look, I'm hot. So that was the picture of me.
That's awesome. That's so cool. So wait, but who is Luna the Tuna? Can you tell us?
Oh, it is the school mascot.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Oh, wow.
High school in Pennsylvania, which is a made up place. But that's why it's a tuna for Altoonisburg. We had a huge character tuna costume on. So I danced in the classroom that got a chemistry lab that got blown up with the foam stuff.
I'm doing it wrong. That's kind of.
Oh, my God.
It doesn't look like a regular tuna. It looks like he's been like out of the water for a little bit too.
I can't tilt it because it'll turn, but that's kind of.
Oh my God.
Wait.
Super here. Fun. That's one of wild. Our other writers.
Does it have a voice or does it just flail around?
Just kind of flail around. Yeah, our other another writer was also the tuna. If you had checked.
Oh, great! Wait, Heather, are you going to be the tuna at some point?
I wasn't lucky enough to be the tuna, but I am. I had one line in one, so I get. And that'll be next this coming Saturday. It'll be on that one. I have one line, and then I run out literally.
Yay! That's so exciting.
So it was fun.
share a little bit with Megan and Chris about your guys' you guys' writing styles about I was just gonna ask her that. Yeah.
So do you have like a writing quote unquote ritual, like when you're gonna sit down and you're like going to I wanna write a script or write a song? What is your state of mind when you prepare to do that?
Before we start, I jump in. We're deeply unfocused people and we are distracted by everything. And no matter what it is, if we have to sit down and write, like almost anything will take precedence. So what we do is if we know we're going to write something, if we don't have anything down on paper yet or whatever, we actually do let ourselves do a lot of discussion time. We found out that's actually true for Nickelodeon as well. There's a lot of just sitting around the table going like, well, what about this? And da, da, da. And we kind of do that together, although we involve wine if we can, or coffee. There's some chemical, coffee or wine involved to get started.
I can tell you, I was actually very blessed to be part of a coffee discussion at one point.
Was that the one we were arguing?
I think you were the one. Conversation. It was a real discussion. Yeah. And these two women love each other. And I was like, We were in it, girl.
And we're not always.
Yeah, first, something amazing came out of it. It was really amazing. Yeah, it was fantastic. Yeah.
So if you guys have any kind of roadblock when you guys are writing, what do you guys do to kind of like decompress, take a few steps back, and kind of take the angle a different direction?
Well, we have. Go ahead, Megan. You want to? Sorry.
Wine and a rock.
Wine and a rock. We also have this idea. We figured it out working together that like if both of us feel very strongly about something or we have a really strong idea, like the day Aubrey came.
Yeah.
It was so good. It really was.
We do go to like both of us are right, so there must be another solution out there that scratches the itch or fixes it or works, and like it takes work to do, but that's actually really helped. So when we're kind of stuck, that's what we do. But if we were decompressing, wine. Back to wine, Megan.
Rosie, I wanted to ask you the same question because you write with your boyfriend, which adds another element to it a little bit. So
yeah. So I very much get the best of both worlds in that I have projects that are kind of just, you know, when I'm writing them, I write them. And then obviously I have a wonderful support system who will, he kind of has to read them, I guess, right? Because I'm like, I'm here, so I know if you're not reading it. You can't be like, I'm too busy. I'm like, you were watching basketball. But the things that we do work on together, it's actually really interesting because we took about a year of dating, I think, before we actually started working together. I think just because we wanted to get solid in our relationship and because both of us had very much been sort of like lone wolves creatively before that. That's my gal. That's my BB. She was the best thing to come out of quarantine. But the really nice thing when we're working together is sometimes it varies, right? Like if it's a big important scene that we both want to be working on together, it's going to be the two of us sort of sitting down, you know, I'll be writing it and he'll look over my shoulder and he'll interject or vice versa. He'll be writing it and, you know, we'll kind of go back and forth. But what's nice about the two-person approach is sometimes it can be like, okay, we just want to get a draft on the page before we start refining it. You take this scene, I'll take this scene. At the end of it, we'll sit down, we'll put them together, we'll see how they look. And then once they're on paper together, you're going to find out what clashes and you're also going to find out what works. And you can kind of find a way to, I think, bring those ideas together a little bit more cleanly. But I totally relate to what Heather said, where it's like sometimes you're both so adamant about a point and it's like, okay, you're 100% right, because if both of those like are right, then there's got to be a better option. There's got to be that third magic Goldilocks bed that's just right.
I love that because it's just so, it's not confrontational. You're not fighting the person, you're creating the best idea, and that's like the best possible outcome.
Yeah. I'm so sorry.
Oh, I was just gonna say, you do have to have genuine respect for the other person. Like, it's gotta be like a deep respect, because I feel like that's the key, because if you don't, and then you just think you're right.
Oh, that's a good one. I will also say, writing together, I think out of all the different things you can do together as a team, whether it's a friendship team or a romantic team, writing together is fine. You know what's stressful is editing together. because nobody can edit and be in a good mood. I don't care how much you love editing. I don't care how patient of a person you are. No one is in a good mood when they edit.
You're so right. It's like,
oh my God.
You're just like, Hunter, you're like,
You know, I don't think I've ever seen a happy editor. I don't
know. Oh, also, I should clarify. I meant like editing film, but I guess also editing like copy editing as well.
Yeah. I hear you. Oh. I hear you on editing film. I haven't done very much, but I'm very grumpy when I do it. But the editing writing kind of feels
it's a grumpy activity. In a
weird way. It's a different mindset. Right? Oh, sorry.
Here's a question I'm going to ask for each of you. I'll start with you, Rosie. As far as getting into filmmaking and producing and writing and doing what you're doing, what are some of the most important attributes for yourself? Like for me, as I move forward now after everything I've matured and evolved and learned with ups and downs, like I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go have fun. My team's going to have fun. We're going to have an adventure. We're going to show up and we're going to go do this and tackle it together. And everyone, you know, that's kind of my approach. What's your approach as far as taking on these, making a film and the whole process is ridiculously almost impossible. It's very difficult. There's so many moving parts. How do you move forward in this?
So a big part of it for me, and I think this comes from good old imposter syndrome, I like to know as much as I can about every part of the process. And I think that's because there's this little voice in my head that's like, who are you to say that you can do this? So for me, the way that I shut that voice down and really find that I'm able to be in sort of control of my mind and hopefully the process on set, is sort of to approach it from, if I know as much as I can about everything, I can come into this and I can talk to people more easily. I can be so much more effective at my job. So even if I don't know how to light a scene perfectly, I want to know what the lighting gear is called. You know, even so, learning those bits and pieces about the big picture make me feel so much more comfortable in what I'm doing. Not just because then I feel like I'm respecting the craft of the people around me, but also because I think it makes me a more conscious writer and producer, because the more I know about the other elements of production, the more I can sort of spot potential pitfalls, think about, okay, well, I know from this side that's going to be more expensive. So what can I do on the writing side to minimize that? So to me, the most effective thing is like, I'm a research nerd. And if I can fall down a research rabbit hole about it and learn as much as I can, I'm going to feel that much more in control of the situation.
That's cool. Are you saying Megan and
Can you clarify the question again? What
did I do that?
Oh boy, I don't know.
Can you clarify the question again? Because I started thinking, and I was like, "This is not
sure." So, as far as where you're at now, how do you approach diving into whatever you're doing? You mentioned a little bit of how you guys work together as writing. What's your like? I like to have fun and adventure, and that's more important than anything else. It's like at the end of the day, that's what I want to accomplish. Everyone's going to show up and do their thing because all the trial and errors have led to that point. I don't know. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, so for himself, he doesn't worry about the outcome because he knows that's going to happen.
Oh, okay.
He knows the end product is going to happen. He's been through it a lot of the process repeatedly. He has a great team that we constantly count on. And we know that when they come to the table, they're going to bring their best and everything's going to be accomplished. So rather than putting the stress on the process and who's doing what and did everybody do their job and, you know, all of that kind of thing, is everybody doing their job and still having fun? Is there an adventure in this process? Is the experience going to be something that people remember in a joyful way, essentially? So that's what's important for Jerry in the entire process.
I would say we're fairly similar. I mean, we do a lot of talk about world building of like how we want our kind of our lives to be as a whole. And one thing that Heather said that's always really stuck with me is She's like, I want to have fun every day. And so we actually actively work towards that. And also we made like a goal for ourselves a couple years ago that we were not going to make decisions based in fear, which is saying that's a lot easier than doing it. And it's caused us to make some decisions that could be questionable or could be considered irresponsible. But I have to say our lives have been enriched for it, and I have not regretted making those choices since then.
Yeah.
Like we went to a dog instead of staying and getting a job.
Yeah, we did. We were out of a job and we're like, let's go to Prague for 6 weeks.
Yes, that'll fix it. We'll get a one-way ticket. Maybe we'll have a job when we get back. Let's spend all the money we just made on
European. You don't regret it, do you?
No.
Not a bit. Oh my gosh. What?
That's in Germany, yeah.
It was, we met great people. One of our side goals this year was a job that came directly out of going to that trip. And so we've worked from it. We came back and the agency thing. Not over, but
the standoff.
Like that.
And our agents got tired of not working. So they started their own agency like the week we got back. The timing worked really well. And we got a lot of writing done, which is what we wanted. So we wanted to be in a place that would give us some inspiration. And
yeah,
we did it.
I'm so inspired by what you said, Megan, just not making decisions based in fear. We all have to keep checking back to that, I think, on a almost a daily basis, maybe on a regular, like, hourly basis sometimes. And just getting back to that center of, like, oh, wait a second. It's intentional, right? It's making intentional choices. It's making sure that we are not just reacting and snapping. And it's such a difficult thing to do. And I think I just respect that so much. And I love Prague, and maybe I'll go too.
One of the things that sticks out, Aubrey, that you mentioned about Chris, actually, is that, you know, you're an opera, you're a professional singer, and he's younger, and he's already creating his albums and stuff. Like, can you go like touch on that a little bit?
I'm not sure what context. Exactly.
Well, that he's actually doing stuff.
Oh,
he's not scared. There's fear and all that stuff.
I respect the hell out of Chris because he has been writing for so many years.
Oh yeah.
And he's a young man, and he's just not like, I know that you're not 1,000,000% fearless, but from the outside, the perspective is like, nothing can hold this guy back. He just doesn't have enough fear to stop himself in any moment. And it's very respectful. It's really inspiring.
I think that once you've been through so much as an individual, you only have two options. It's either to break down or stay in the state of mind of you're never going to move, if that's what you believe, or you pick up your things and you take one step at a time. And you pick up your head and you're like, you know, I'm going to do this for myself. A lot of people like to say, I'm going to do it for X, Y, and Z. I'm going to help everyone. But you have to take care of yourself before you can take care of anybody.
That's really true.
I have that conversation with my therapist a lot. She calls it the oxygen mask. What is it? The oxygen mask theory or something. Like, you have to put on your own oxygen mask before taking care of others, or you're not going to be able to help anyone.
Yeah.
Now, put yourself first. Do what you need to do.
Going down, right? Airplane is going down, and everyone's screaming. And you know, while they're screaming, you get to breathe, and then you can put seatbelts on everybody. I work a lot with momentum. And there's all different kinds of momentum. Yeah. There's positive momentum and negative momentum and there's neutral.
Yeah.
And so anytime that I start to feel icky or stupid, or I start getting negative, or, you know, whatever random thoughts, I catch it as quick as I can. I'm at the point where I'm catching it within seconds or minutes or an hour or something. I'm like, you know, I'm just being stupid here. And I know how to just stop that momentum. And then I try to create a mana or things that I enjoy, that I love, that make me happy, where it's talking to your friends, where it's laying down, just things that can bring you to neutral. And then you start to
sleep.
And then you start to feed yourself, take care of yourself first and put good things back into you, like nutrients and nutrition and stuff. Not literally like protein and all that stuff, but just for your heart and for your soul, your mind. And eventually you start to create that positive momentum. And you get to the point where your positive momentum is just going so fast and so powerful that these other things that start to come into your life, they become like a flat tire or bigger things. They just become nothing. It's like, that needed to happen because, you know, it protected us, you know, for the next steps. And you just get to keep on this incredible momentum. It starts to go for longer periods of time. Hours, days, weeks, months, and all these incredible things start to build up, and all of a sudden, pop, you know, there's an Aubrey.
Oh. Right there.
Or boom, you know, you got a Megan, a Heather, and a Rosie, and then all of a sudden our projects are coming together. You guys are getting the next jobs are already waiting for you. You know, now you're like
back from Prague.
Yeah. And it's okay to, you know, treat yourself. We are here for a short period of time in this world. You know, we have a short time that we share with each other and for yourself. And how many times do we spend so much time putting weight on ourselves and regret and feeling guilty and all these things are just
useless kinds of,
it's just human to do that. Yeah. They don't have classes in middle school or high school and college that say how to take care of yourself and be positive and take a optimistic approach to things. And everything's fight for this, fight, you know, just be you. We're not competition with anybody, in my opinion. You know, it's just go do what makes you happy. And then you these outcomes, you start to soar and people recognize you in Prague and other magic starts to create itself. And, you know, we go to a dinner and we meet and connect, you know, like Rosie, you know.
That was the most fun. And I swear it wasn't just I don't get out much anymore.
Yeah.
There you go. I'm curious. I would love to know what your first writing genre was and then how that has kind of transitioned into your favorite place to write right now.
Oh, Rosie's ready to go.
Yeah, I can see you. <She's-
laughs> So I'm gonna cop to this. I'm pretty sure my first genre I really got into, it's not even a genre so much as I'm just gonna come out and say it. I was probably like 14 and writing fan fiction.
Oh, cool. Yeah. What show? Fan fiction.
Not sure if anybody else was a fan of the Tamara Pierce books, but I had a very well-reviewed Tamara Pierce fan fiction at age 14 that I think was like probably the first time that I was like, okay, I'm good enough at this that other people like it.
Oh, wow.
Like I've been writing since I was... The first thing I remember writing was when I was, and I say well-reviewed, I just mean like nobody was like, this sucks. It wasn't like I was, oh my God, a hit. It was just like nobody was like, oh my God, you're a hack, you stupid 14-year-old. But I think it probably, I started writing, I remember like writing short stories in fifth grade for my favorite English teacher. That was when I really started. But the first time I think I realized like I can do this and share it with someone was being 14 and writing about something I loved on the internet. And it was like super cheesy. And if I read it now, I would probably cringe so hard. But you know what? That was the confidence that I was like, I could do this thing. And I will say that was like, it was totally like I was writing fluffy romantic comedy stuff. And you know what? As much as I love to write satire and dark comedy these days, I need a break where I go write a random Hallmark romantic comedy because it makes me smile.
Yay.
So I think that carried over for sure.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Megan. And then I got into the industry where like, oh, you have to write a spec script and that's like official fan fiction. So.
Oh, that's so cool.
Nice.
So it came full circle. Oh,
it came full circle.
Oh,
wow.
Oh, you look so good.
I like the looks. I actually,
I know there's a red card.
I look like I know a little. That was fun. We did a premiere for, that's actually for She and Her, the one we shot with Carolyn. And that was really fun. We rented out a theater and did a screening. And because our mindset was sort of, we want people to see this and we're going to submit it to festivals, but we can't control what festivals it's going to get into. So at the end of the day, let's, before we even do that, let's throw an event. Let's invite the people we care about. Let's show them what we're proud of and let's feel good about it. And that was an awesome night. That was a really great night.
That's such a great, it's just acknowledging yourself and acknowledging all the work that went into your project and knowing that everybody did their best on it. Like there's, I don't know if there's a better feeling, honestly. I'm sure money's great. I know from a little experience, but you know, being able to just have the pride in that project and that giving yourself the chance to acknowledge it, that's so huge.
It was a really, really awesome night. And I think you're totally right. There's something about waking up the day after you've wrapped on something or after you've finished a new draft. And like, there's this little bit of sadness inside you that it's done. Because now you have to move on to something else or go back to your day job or whatever. But there's also that feeling of like, oh my God, I did it.
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
That's amazing. All right. So same question, Megan or Heather?
I guess there's like a couple different answers, but one would be, I mean, we came from writing from different worlds. And I just had an idea to write something. This is terrible. My friend was going through a breakup, but the way she would tell it was so funny. And I was like, I really want to write this down. And I got her permission first, right? I was like, but this is so ridiculous that
no one. Which also was ridiculous about it?
Yeah, you know, she was breaking up who was a guy who was a friend of mine, but he was like, every day it was a new thing because we were in this rock, my friend and I were in this rock opera together. So we were rehearsing and she would come in with these stories every day. And she's like, today he said he's not really seeing her, but on her Twitter account, it was like, hung out with my boo this weekend in San Francisco. She goes, guess where Ryan, I'm going to say his name. Guess where Ryan was this weekend in San Francisco at a game. Like, so there's pictures on this girl's Twitter account, like with him. And he's like, it wasn't me. But every day it was like a new thing that was so ridiculous. I was like, no one would believe this if you weren't living it. Anyway, like write about it and please, this situation forever. And I didn't really know anything too much about writing. And Heather came to the rock opera. I was like, this will either, you're either going to think this is hysterical or the worst thing ever. it's a free ticket. It's not a bar. So it's horrible. You could just drink. And she was like, okay. And so I started talking to her about this. And I was like, you just wrote a book and you finished it. I feel like you should write this with me. Which she did. Book. So you should talk about that. Because that's your big first writing accomplishment.
Yeah. Cool. No, that was fun though. We had fun writing that though. We wrote I think the first thing that turned into a little web series that we didn't produce it, but we ended up writing it based on his characters.
I'm not doing editing, and you don't understand how much it is. See, back to Rosie. She knows. So anyway, that led to us writing a film together, and then also at the same time we were able to like quit our other jobs. Got a job writing for an app company
called Yarn.
Yeah, storytelling through, and it paid like just enough that we were like, okay, we're at least gonna quit our other jobs for like the summer and see what happens. And so those were kind of, I guess, our real. We felt like writers after we finished the feature.
Yeah.
It was that feeling of we did that. And
wow.
So
that's incredible.
So we're celebrating Women in Film this month. And this is a question for the four of you.
Oh, we didn't get to hear Heather's origins.
Oh, just sorry.
I'll read the novel that you wrote.
I'll be super fast. I'm using one of them. I'm using it to pick up to hold up my computer.
What?
I wrote this thing.
Oh my gosh.
Jackie, how?
That's awesome.
Very funny.
It was, I'm going to hold on. I got to hold on the computer. Got to, you know, look. Anyway. It's basically like, I need to update it and stuff. It's because I wrote it like a few years ago, but Yeah, it was just a romance, like kind of like, I feel a kinship with Rosie in this little bit, in that it was like, I basically wrote a paranormal romance novel comedy thing. And finishing it was actually the biggest thing for me. I was not a finisher for anything most of my adult life. And then this book was great because it was low pressure. Nobody cares. Like, it's like, you know what I mean? Like, it was that kind of thing. But like finishing it made a big difference. And that was what I feel like. I was like, oh, I think I can do this because I finished it. Damn it. So, yeah.
And I wrote on those coattails, guys.
Have you written more than one novel, or was that the start, and then that you guys transitioned to film and television from there?
It's the only novel I've written. Hopefully it's not the last. I work on the Jackie Howell series anytime there's like space in between stuff. But
oh,
yeah,
it's the series. Oh, I'm so excited.
Someday it'll come out. But yeah,
can you do something like that to Disney or Nickelodeon?
Or do you I'm losing. I don't know. I'm losing on my end a little bit. Can you say that?
Can you hear me now?
Better.
Yeah.
Can you hear
me? Strange.
So Heather, do you plan on pitching the Jackie Howell to Disney or Nickelodeon?
Oh man, probably not. It probably wouldn't fit because it is. It's more, what, Megan?
It's a little inappropriate.
It's a little, oh! I guess a romance novel. It's like kind of, like a Vampire Diaries kind of feel. Oh, what'd you say? I'm so sorry. I'm losing your audio. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I was saying maybe you could pitch it to like HBO for Red Shoes or something, but I don't know what the content is.
Would be more like HBO.
What level of sexy are we talking? Are we talking CW sexy? Are we talking HBO sexy? Like, where's the?
You know, it is kind of. Uh-huh. I would say more CW, but it's like, yeah, it's probably more CW, I guess. I mean, there is some sexy time in it because it's a romance novel, but it's not like
on a scale of Vampire Diaries to Bridgerton.
I would say in between that. Yeah. I would say in between that. It's you know. Yeah.
Little more than Vampire Diaries because we just want to see more abs and. No, Vampire Diaries, it scratched the edge, guys. Let's
I would love to ask you guys a question before. So with all of you guys being women, at what age, and gorgeous women, first of all, at what age did you guys kind of just know that, you know what, I want to be bigger in my life than what I am now. Like, I want to be a writer. I want to be just working on set where there's a lot of male dominance, and for females to step out and be like, you know, my voice matters. I am here. I'm beautiful, and I'm going to do an amazing job just like the men.
Ooh. Hmm. I don't know. Like, I know that, like, for me, like, there was this little voice inside that I didn't really listen to for a long time. That, you know, I feel like we all, this not to sound weird, but there's like this little voice I think we all have that kind of whispers to us about who we are a little bit. And I think, like, in my early 20s, I was like, spent all my time trying to be what I thought I should be and stuff like that and moving on. But like, I don't know if there was like a particular age that it hit, but I do feel like the voice kind of got a little louder to where I couldn't ignore it, if that makes, it kind of grew. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
I hope that doesn't sound weird, but I mean it.
It's my experience. Understand. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was going to say something similar to what Chris was saying too. I'd like to, if you guys could share something that you're saying your voice, you listen to your voice on that. You know, from my experience, there hasn't been a whole bunch of, you know, women are a minority in the industry. I haven't got the opportunity to work with a lot of very, you know, strong female voices because it's predominantly male dominated. What are some times that you had to stand, you know, that you felt that you had to, you know, maybe uncomfortably voice and stand up for yourself, someone, another woman, and like what's that, what's been some of those experiences? The whole, you know, the cream of, you've all rose to the top to wherever you're at now, but it's not free. There's a lot of sacrifice. There's a lot of growth and learning to this experience. And what can you share with our other audiences? Like, what are some things that are real? You know, here you guys are doing what you're doing and writing for Disney and Nickelodeon and producing your own feature film, and you as well being a lead actress and stuff. Like, what are some things that have happened where you're like, no, this is not cool?
It's weird because I think that the older you get, the more you see it. Like I was very fortunate in that I went to a middle and high school.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. Can you guys hear me?
Now I can. Yeah. Try again.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. Awesome. So I was just going to say, I was very lucky in that I went to a school that sounds like a bit of an oxymoron in that it was a very like old traditional all girls school, but at the same time it was incredibly liberal in terms of like the values and the education that they brought us up with. So I was literally like from age 11 on, it was like, you're a girl, people might look at you differently, but your voice, can I curse, your voice effing matters. And so I kind of grew up with that, not really, you know, I took it for granted. And then I got to college, and I took a comedy writing class, and it was a very old school professor who had worked on a bunch of sitcoms back in like the 80s and like talk about the glory days. And he looked around the class, which was probably like 10 people, including a boy who had not been very nice to me the semester before. And I looked around this classroom of all these people who made me feel intimidated. And I noticed there was only two other girls in the class. And the professor literally said, this like 70-year-old white dude said, you may notice that there's only three women in the class. That's usually what comedy rooms tend to look like. And you know, it's because girls can't always handle the fact that we like to get a little dirty in the room. Like we like to talk, you know, we like to talk this way. We like to make these jokes. So ladies, I'm gonna tell you right now, if you can't handle it, you know, it's the first week of class that you can drop if you can't handle it. And I didn't say anything because I was 21 and figuring out what my voice meant and what all that meant, but I just sat there and fumed because this is this professor that all of these guys in this class thought hung the moon. They're like, he's so cool, he's so cool, oh my god, he has all these stories about smoking pot on set, he's so cool. And meanwhile I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay, first off, don't imply that women can't play ball, because honestly most of the girls I know will be just as filthy as the guys. They'll also probably find a way to make it even funnier. So on top of that, guess what? If a woman's not comfortable in a writer's room, that's maybe not her problem. Maybe you shouldn't be a jackass. So I got really mad in the moment and I didn't know what to do. But for that class, the final project was that we had to write a spec episode of the Larry Sanders Show. Larry Sanders, there we go. I'm like, it was a couple years ago. We had to watch the show and write a spec episode of it. And I decided, F you, sexist professor. You think girls can't hang? And I wrote my spec script about a very unfortunate Viagra incident.
Yes!
And after moments like that, I kind of realized, like, okay, there are ways to come back from it, whether it's with your actions or with your words. And then as I started getting into the industry, a lot of the times I noticed, you know, when I was like a development assistant, I was the only girl in the room. And my bosses were awesome guys and they were absolutely allies, but things don't always register. And so we would get scripts and I would read them and they wouldn't see an issue. And I'd be like, hey, I'm going to get on my soapbox, like brace for it. I'm going to get on my soapbox, but here's why this is a problem. And I was very fortunate that in those situations I was working with really wonderful people who respected and heard my voice and were able to like say, you're absolutely right. Let's work on that. How can we be better? But it definitely, to me, I think comes with age, because the more that stuff happens to you, the better you get at realizing it. And you kind of decide how you're going to react. Although you do have to pick your battles, unfortunately. Like there is that line of, am I going to say what's right or am I going to play the game? And unfortunately, sometimes you do have to make that call because you know that you can do more if you get further down the road.
Mm, yeah. Hmm. is a good story.
Yeah. Hell yeah, girl.
Yeah. I mean,
any story with Viagra, right?
That was awesome.
That was awesome.
I don't want to read that script.
I know, I kind of do too.
Oh my God. I gotta find it. It's on some old laptop that might not even work anymore, but if I can find it.
Oh my God. Well, that's such a clever way to state your point. Like you said, there's always a way to say what needs to be said. It's not necessarily that you have to pick. I think the standard is, does this need to be said? Yes or no. Does this need to be said right now? Yes or no. Does this need to be said by me? Yes or no. And so if you can answer yes to all three of those things confidently, you can respond and say, yeah, you know what? It's time for me to bring this up. But if it's no to any one of those, if you're like, actually, the perspective coming from this voice would be a little bit stronger, I'm going to go ahead and let them make that point. Then you, again, it's like you said, picking your battles according to how effective the message is going to be.
Yeah.
I know we're really choppy. Thanks for hanging with us, guys.
Yeah.
Yay, the internet's.
Yeah.
It's pretty. It's, yeah. The COVID reality too. Yeah, it's not as pretty.
Yeah, pretty normal. This has been everybody's life for the past year at this point.
Yeah. I just read a really funny analogy that all of these kinds of conferences are like seance. So, can you hear me? Are you there? Now, you know, just think of those kinds of questions. So, Megan, Heather, do you have as a team an experience like that? As individuals, an experience like that? Have you?
There was. We got like before we got like a mini gig or two before we did some of the stuff. The Disney and the Nickelodeon stuff, but there was one where I don't want to say too much, but they were very concerned about, there was like, about there were two female characters in it. They were very concerned about these characters being likable, that likability thing.
Oh,
it was a huge concern. And the result was these characters weren't as funny as they could have been because the point of comedy is that the characters are flawed. So
Randall wants to watch a well-adjusted person and think that's funny. So, you know. And I feel like that is something like as writers that you'll run into is the idea of a strong, empowered female character means you have to do everything perfectly.
Yeah.
And that's actually almost the opposite message that we should be sending to girls if we're doing it for that look. And I feel like we're still fighting that. There's an idea of what empowered female, she just
works
the time and she's never upset and she just always does the right thing. And it was like, just write a human. And that is, so I feel like, you know, that's but it's not a struggle all the time, but I do feel like I also see it on TV. And so it's refreshing when you see someone who's a girl who's flawed and has to overcome something because it's human.
Yeah,
that's also at the heart of it. That's what makes a good story.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you don't have flaws, if you don't have challenges to overcome, that's pretty boring.
Yeah.
I've also noticed sometimes if someone's building a strong female character and there's not necessarily a diversity of voices sort of contributing it to it, quite often the strong female character is just mean for no reason.
Yeah.
Which. I don't quite get, like, I don't,
wrong if you're
there's a lack of complexity there. That's that's unfortunate.
It's very one-dimensional, and you're just kind of like, huh.
Yeah.
She says, so she's a bitch. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like, huh, here we go again. You know, so.
Yeah. And to take it one step further, and I also, the strong female character thing, too, I also kind of, I think we all probably run into this, too. It's like, how about just a character? Like, strong female, does like, that's saying, that's already implying something about being female that's not right. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So
it contributes to that whole
like Serena Williams.
Oh no, go ahead. I cut you off. You got
said something, you know, someone was like, you're one of the best female tennis players in the world, and she can't she's like, can't just be one of the best tennis players in the world. She genuinely is, you know.
Yeah.
And I think making that that distinction, like, and we're getting closer. I mean, I feel like, I mean, the room that we're writing in now is top notch. I mean, the people, everyone's super respectful. Everyone really cares what people think and just wants to make a good show. And so it's really, I mean, when you get in one of those environments, you're like, oh, the world is changing and there are really good people out there. And it's just important to find them and hopefully spend as little time as possible as with people who aren't. Because also women can be just as bad with it as men.
Yes, that's true.
And
yeah,
which is a shame, but it's true. I've equally run into women.
It's absolutely true.
Men, so.
It can be disappointing to get in a room.
And I think a lot of that actually.
Yeah. No, go ahead. I'm sorry. I don't know what you have
to say. I was just going to jump on that and say I think that actually your two points tie together really well, because Megan, you're saying a lot of the times the problem actually comes from women as well. And Heather, you pointed out how problematic the strong female character stereotype is. And I think the link between those two things is that the strong female character stereotype implies that there is only one way to be an empowered woman. And that leads to the kind of thinking of like, the only way to be a valuable woman is to be the girl who's not like other girls, the girl who watches football and doesn't care about eating salad and eats a burger. And she's also the girl who will put down other women because she knows she's different and she only hangs out with the guys. And it's like, then that's the person that's coming at it from this angle, because you're being told that being feminine isn't empowered. And it's like, you can be empowered and kick ass. You can be empowered and do a really great cat's eye with your eyeliner. You can do both. You can do neither. None of that affects how empowered you are. And on top of it, then you add in all the layers, right? Because you get into intersectionality, where I'm complaining about the stuff I've faced and I'm a straight white woman. So like, if you look at the totem pole of oppression of voices and frustrations and microaggressions, I'm well aware that a college professor hurting my feelings is pretty mild on the scope of what people have experienced.
Sure.
I hear you.
But it also should be heard, because also it was life-changing, you know, like, and other people have heard stuff like that too. And they your story, that story was that great. Should put that in something.
For sure.
I always love those moments where it's like, hey,
sorry.
The best way to get anything done is to prove someone wrong. I think that is the strongest motivation sometimes.
I completely agree. Mm-hmm.
Megan and Heather, I got a question for you, for our audience. What is the day in the life of you guys, say, starting a new episode? Like, the studio calls you, a producer calls you. I mean, just the ABC 1, 2, 3 of what goes on. They say, hey, we have an idea. We need episode 6, you know, or how that works. Can you tell us, like, everything? Like, what are the details? How long does it take? You know, what's the process? How many back and forths are there?
Yeah,
you go.
Today. Oh, sorry. No, actually, you could talk. Today we did some of that today, actually. Yeah, so go ahead, Megan. I'm sorry.
I was going to say similar things. The room that we're in now is, I mean, every writer's room is different and depends on who is the showrunner and how they want to run things. The room we are in now, we actually all write the script together. So we don't go off and write a script, this is the first time we've worked this way, which when you have the right room, it's pretty... It goes pretty smoothly. I can imagine that it would not work well in all rooms, but our group is great. So all sit on Zoom all day and pitch ideas and jokes. And what about if they said this next? Or what about if they did this? And
often our showrunner, like, he'll come in, like, usually, like, sometimes we'll talk, we'll kind of blue sky it and we'll kind of talk story. But usually our showrunner will come in. He's talked, there's a kind of a team that's also, they're kind of second command, and they kind of come in like, yeah, we're kind of thinking this idea where, you know, our characters get stuck in a garbage compactor at a garbage dump and like, or something like that. And like, and then we all kind of like, and it's about, usually about 10 a.m. and we're all on Zoom, we're all kind of drinking our coffee, you know, kind of waking up. And we're like, yeah, what about this? And da, da, da. And then we have a writer's assistant who sometimes, usually at this point, notes aren't up, but at some point we're like, oh, let's get some of this on paper. Then on the share screen, the Word doc will come up and the writer's assistant will write down bullet points. And then we kind of, but it's kind of a lot of drinking coffee and like, just, well, what about this? So what about this? And like, and then kind of, and it starts forming. And then usually that, like we did that, we did one story doc in a couple hours. We had a good day because we did two story docs today. That was pretty one pagers, one to two pagers. That's a pretty good day. And then we do the outline, which will take a day or two, depending on how challenging the story is. We get network feedback. And then, yeah, then we write the script together, kind of like all, it's all on the screen.
So
how long does it take to do an episode or a feature? If you guys, on average, I know it can take a lot of time, but on average, would you say like a feature film takes 6 weeks to 3 months, or does it, or you know, what's your guys's
a feature? I'm not I couldn't say as much, but I bet Rosie would know more.
Because I was like, we wrote our, that was our first big assignment. Yeah. We wrote it twice.
We made all the mistakes in that one.
We were drama writers, guys.
But in an episode, I would say if it goes well, we could probably write an episode about it from beginning to end if we just add, because it's all separated because we're doing multiple episodes. So we'll do multiple documents or multiple outlines and kind of get that outline in between the writing of the episode and between the punching up. So there's a lot of stuff. I would say 7 to 9 days total, including shoot days and stuff like that. Kind of, but it's all spread out around everything else, puzzle piece together with all the other episodes where we have in the air. I would say, like, not count. Does that make sense, Megan, or am I just talking?
And I mean, look, one of the other shows we worked on, we were very, very behind. Like, we didn't have the script to shoot for the next week. And you don't ever really want to be in that position. But when we were stuck in that position, we even did like Frankenstein, they call it, where we outline it all together and then everyone goes off and writes a scene. And then you come back a few hours later and now you have at least a draft. That's going to be a disaster, but you can then start going through and pick and fixing it. So.
Jerry, you're breaking up.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jerry, we're losing you.
Oh, no.
Hear me now. All of my hands. Can you see this?
Oh, no. Like, sorry.
Angela, what's going on?
It's our internet, guys.
Yeah.
I think our internet is on the fritz, and I'm so sad.
Oh no! I feel the pain. I feel the pain, guys. Who else feels the pain?
How long do you?
Rosie, do you know how long it would take to write a film? Rosie, do you know how long, like, for a film script?
I mean, when's my deadline? How much have I procrastinated? So it's funny because I think it varies based on the project, and I like, because most of the features I'm writing honestly have been on spec, and 2-11, the one we're making, we wrote so far ahead of production that it's just been rewrites. 2-11 all pieced together, I think Nate and I probably churned out the vomit draft and the first polish in about a month. I've written movies that I wanted to show someone and had procrastinated. I've turned out a draft in a week and it hasn't been very good. And I've had to do a lot of revising on it. And I drank a lot of coffee, but to me, I think it's kind of like, what are the time constraints and do you work well under pressure? But the other thing is I like writing fast and getting stuff out all at once, because when I was working at The Young and the Restless, soap opera writing is insane. You get your outline on Wednesday. You basically have two separate teams of, you have outline writers and you have script writers. And ahead of all that, you have the head writer and the co-head writers. And the head writer and the co-head writers are the only ones who are doing like the overarching story. They'll literally be like Monday's episode, Tuesday's episode, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Yeah. And then they fill in like the main beats that happen on each day. And then those main beats go to the outline writers. And the outline writers have a week to turn around like a really detailed 15-page outline. And then that outline after they've written it, goes to the scriptwriters, and the scriptwriters have a week to turn around a full 60 to 70 page script. And when I was working there, and the really cool thing is when I was a script coordinator for them, I got the chance to write a couple of sample scripts. Like, they actually hired me to write shadow scripts of the show, so I got to practice, which was awesome, especially because I got paid for it.
Nice.
But it was crazy because I was writing on that pace. So I got the outline on Wednesday. And in addition, I was still doing my job as script coordinator. So in addition to my day job as the script coordinator, I had from Wednesday to Monday to turn around a 65-page script. And so to me, that was sort of this lesson in, like, if you have a good outline, you can write a script really fast.
So this is comedic. While you guys are doing this, the little dog is humping Alvin and the chipmunks. Right here on our feet, and we're trying not to laugh.
Sorry.
That's like he's going on. It's Rufus the dog.
No.
He's going on it right now.
No, no.
A little lipstick.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I love it.
Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
65 pages from Monday to Wednesday.
69 pages.
Crazy.
That is bananas.
Those were crazy, and that was very much like I had an outline that had been written, and I had been at that point working at the job for 2.5 years, so I knew the characters well enough to do it. But that to me was very much an exercise in, like, if you have a good outline and if you have a really close deadline, you can write something really, really, really fast.
Yeah, I do feel like a good outline makes all the difference, and it's worth putting time in at the top than trying to play catch up as you're going. It feels like it always ends up taking more time. I guess, like, that's something that Heather and I had to realize, because when we first started writing, especially the film we wrote, there was a lot of talking, and then our first pilot that we wrote together, we didn't realize until we got into an actual writer's room that all the talking we were doing, we thought we were wasting time. Instead, we got into our first writer's room and we're like, oh, we're only going to talk for like 10 hours and not write anything. Oh, that's what we've been doing. We're okay. We just thought we were insane.
So. We don't totally suck as much as we thought we did.
Oh.
That was the night at the Langham Hotel where I was infiltrating things that I was in places I wasn't supposed to be.
But no, I'm totally envious of you guys because I love the TV writer's room structure. Like, what I've been working on recently has been film and has been my own stuff because I've been freelancing. But, oh, my God, I love the writer's room structure because that collaboration makes everything so much easier. It's so much easier to be able to talk through an idea and find that answer rather than just sitting there staring at a piece of paper, hating yourself for hours and hours and hours on end. More.
I call Heather all the time when we're working on our own stuff, and I'm like, I need to talk this through. but you're right. I do understand.
And so I would actually say, anyone who's listening, even if you're like very much a solitary writer and not someone who wants to collaborate, find a good friend who will just let you talk yourself in circles. For me, that's my friend Ariana. She's a television critic, so her kind of writing is very different. But if I'm trying to break story and if I can't get to where I need to get, I know that she knows TV. And so I can just call her and I can be like, I just need to talk. Tell me if I sound stupid, but I just need to talk. And thank God I have her because it has made my life a lot easier.
It does make it big.
Cool. Yeah, as a writer for myself, what I like to get in writing, the more you start talking about it out loud and sharing your story with your friends and family and stuff, or your writing partners, the more you say it, the more ideas start to come. You get it, so they can bounce back ideas and stuff like that, and it starts to populate a blank page or like a blank outline. It starts to get filled in with magic moments and stuff, and each moment automatically comes like through osmosis, comes with an entire scene or different, oh, these are the characters that need to be in this scene, and it starts to build itself. That's been been my experience. I just had to say that.
I've had a little bit of experience in writing because I've been brought on a Rocket Pick to, we're working on a best-selling novel Interview with a Terrorist, and we are turning it into a screenplay. And for me, I thought, oh, great, the story already exists. And we're just basically just rewriting it. So naive. No idea what I was up against. And I just even doing the outline, I felt like I was going to tear my hair out. And there was no reason for it. I was just, you know, it was my first time being part of it. And I was stressed and I wanted to do well and all of those little imposter things that Rosie was talking about earlier, little imposter syndrome voices that are like, oh, you've never done this before. What right do you have to do any of this? And so, but just having that experience. And once we finally got the outline, I had this huge sigh of like just big relief. I was like, oh, there is a story here. Okay. I can help. I can make, you know, I can help fill the blanks and find little things to help and stuff. So it's been a new experience for me, but it's been, I've learned a ton. And you ladies are inspiring me so much because writing my own ideas out, I'm constantly like, oh, somebody's already done that. Somebody already wrote that. There are funnier people than me to write that, or more informed people than me to write for that. But just your own perspectives and they collaborate together and create these perspectives together. I mean, the best idea, not your best idea, but the idea. It's so incredible. You guys are just like, I'm sorry a lot. Like, I have posters on my ears. So I'm understanding quite a bit.
I
love everybody
to you.
Well, I don't
think
I lost
Aubrey.
Some of that. I'm sorry,
Aubrey. She did the most incredible thing. Oh my gosh. And it was a great compliment. You guys missed everything.
No, I'm sorry. We're getting like 30% of it, of what you're saying.
There's one
thing. The gist of it was lovely.
You have been so lovely. Thank you, Ashley. Here is 100 million better to you. We want to thank you for coming on the show with our amazing internet issues. Share your stories, your where you're getting all these amazing things about coming up in the future. We cannot wait to be one. And hopefully, together with all of you, we've just got such an incredible creativity to share.
It sounded really nice. We heard a little.
The tone behind it sounded.
I hear the tone.
And I think we're signing off.
Okay.
Oh, well. There goes. You can't keep living in the past. Life goes on, but there's a last forever. Well, you can't change what's been said or what's been done. It's gone and dead. So what's your worry? So what's your worry? Time traveler, ooh, time traveler, yeah. You can't keep living for tomorrow. You won't see the sunlight if you're shadows up the dreams you have and things you think might take away your joy, but they're not here. So what's your hurry? So what's your hurry? Oh, time traveler. Ooh, time traveler.